The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of November, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets, not with Paul Cooley today, but with Daryl Good, University of Illinois ag economist. And then later in the program, Greg Johnson of the Andersons right here in Champaign County will join us to take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets. Along the way, we'll hear from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and Dave Dickey will update us on all the agricultural news for the day. Dave and I, speaking of that, are on the way or should be arriving about the time you're listening to this program on a Wednesday afternoon in Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. So I'm not actually in the studio, but am coming to you on tape or CD, or in this case, digitally. But we still have a great program for you. Coming up next, the staff here at Illinois Public Media with the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I am Todd Gleason. We recorded this program, as you probably already are aware, on Tuesday when Darrell Good came to the office because, well, Dave Dickey and I are on our way to Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. Darrell and I sat down and talked about yesterday morning's release of the USDA crop production and WASD numbers. I asked him to outline them to begin with.
On the production side, USDA did increase the forecast size of the 2009 soybean crop by raising the yield forecast nationally by 9/10 of a bushel. So that added a few bushels, less than 50 million bushels more than the October forecast. In the case of corn, the forecast did go the other direction. USDA lowered the yield estimate by 1.3 bushels per acre, dropping about 100 million bushels from the estimated size of the harvest. Perhaps not significant changes. I think it still says we're looking at very large crops, obviously, this year, but it did tighten up the balance sheet a bit on corn, even though USDA did drop their estimate of or forecast of exports by another 50 million bushels. So about 50 million came out of year-ending stocks as well. So it did tighten up the balance sheet there. In the case of soybeans, USDA did raise its forecast of both exports and domestic crush, but the larger crop size gives us a little more cushion on ending stocks, jumped that by 40 million bushels. You know, a part of putting together that balance sheet is also recognizing that it looks like South America is shaping up to have an awfully large soybean harvest next spring. USDA raised their forecast there, and that crop looks like it could be as much as 25% larger than the drought-reduced crop of 2009, about 80 million bushels larger than forecast last month. So, you know, supplies of soybeans are pretty ample, it looks like, at this point, and will stay large through the remainder of our marketing year because of the large South American harvest.
Well, let's take up the beans and marketing them to begin with, mostly because by this point in time, a lot of the beans, 75% of them according to USDA as of Monday, so probably 85 or 90% by the time we get to the end of this week, maybe more than that, will have been combined. And so they will either have gone into storage or been marketed across the scale. For the beans that producers harvest this week and or have in storage and they have a few days yet to decide whether they should go ahead and sell them, what's your best advice? Is it still to market them across the scale?
I personally think soybeans are a little pricey at the current level, given the supplies that we're looking at, not only here but in South America. I know that crop has just been planted, so it's still iffy, but it's shaping up to be a very large crop. And I'm a little puzzled by the fact that the soybean market has put a little carry back in the price structure. It seems to me that with prospects of huge supplies 6 months from now, that a carry is not warranted. So I think soybean prices are a little overvalued, in my opinion, at this point, and I would tend to be marketing soybeans as I harvested this year. I don't think there's a lot of upside potential based on what we know right at this point.
Is there a way, and I know there is, but is there a good way to tell really who or why they put the carry into the bean market?
No, it is really not, and it's not a big carry, but, you know, if you look at the November-July spread, that was kind of inverted for a while by a few cents. Now it's 20 cents or so carry. It's not enough to pay storage costs, but it does show a little premium next spring, next summer. And I just think fundamentally, when you're looking at a monster South American crop, that in my mind is a little hard to justify at this point.
Yeah, much of the chatter within the press and the industry itself revolves around the outside markets and the dollar. I take it you don't buy that completely.
Well, I mean, that to some extent has to be built into your forecast of consumption. You're saying a strong financial recovery, a weaker dollar, higher energy prices, that's all going to affect demand and therefore consumption. And when USDA or anybody else puts together a balance sheet, those kind of thoughts have to be behind what you pencil in as potential exports or use of soybean meal and oil domestically or in the export market. So, yes, I think recent developments in those markets are encouraging. We've seen the stock market rally sharply above 10,000 on the Dow. Energy prices are holding strong, and the dollar remained weak. I think those all are encouraging from the demand standpoint. But still, we don't have a shortage of soybeans at the expected level of consumption. And it looks like we could be in a bit of a surplus if the South American crop does materialize.
The corn market has been a bit more of a moving target for marketing earlier in the year when there was carry built into the marketplace. Most, including you, thought, hey, we better go ahead and store the crop. Then when we moved above 380 and towards $4, 410 in that area, that was the time that, well, if you could get it out of the field, go ahead and sell it across the scale. And now we have open harvest really in front of us and really good weather, probably dropped 3 to 5 points this week in moisture, maybe another 3 to 5 points if we're lucky, if producers are lucky next week. There won't be the drying cost out in front of them. What do they do at this point with that's coming out of the field?
Well, corn is not as clear in my mind as soybeans are at this point because I think influenced more by the so-called outside markets, particularly the energy markets. And I remain kind of friendly from the demand standpoint from ethanol. I think crude oil prices, you know, at the $80 level, wholesale gasoline at $2, keeps ethanol prices very, very competitive. It means that ethanol producers can pay quite a bit for corn and still maintain operating margins. So I think that puts a pretty good floor under corn prices. So I would say two things. One, we do hear that some buyers are a bit short of corn, and we hear some push on bids in some markets at this point. And I think I would encourage producers to look around and maybe look further out than their normal delivery markets. They might find some awfully good bids right now for immediate delivery of corn. But other than that, then I think I would not be aggressive. You know, we're at harvest time, have half the crop sold is kind of a rule of thumb. I wouldn't want to be more aggressive than that at this point.
And this involves primarily the idea that crude can satisfy $70 and above, probably, and maybe most analysts are talking about a $3 to $5 break, but then coming back after that at this point, and that ethanol usage will be good. Are you worried at all, and I made a little note, but not much note of this, that test weights for corn will be off, although they're still heavy. They're off from October, but they're, I don't know, they're heavy comparatively speaking yet.
Well, yeah, and test weights are off, but when yield
I should say ear weights from USDA, yeah, as opposed to test weights.
Yeah, ear weights are off a bit, and test weights obviously are down a bit too, but
right.
You know, the bottom line is how many pounds of corn do you have per acre?
Well, I guess that's what my thought is. If the weights are off, then ethanol usage will grind through more of the crop. Livestock, ethanol, all those things will use more of the crop because the performance of that crop won't be as good. But it's still a pretty heavy crop, it looks to me.
Yeah, like, and that's probably getting a bit beyond my capabilities here. I mean, for ethanol, obviously it's the starch content that matters. Does a lighter, you might use more volume, but the same number of pounds, I would think. So you say it'll take more volume, but not more pounds to make the same product. So we measure yield in pounds. So I think, to some extent, it kind of evens out.
All right. So what else did you see in those numbers yesterday from USDA? And, of course, this is airing on Wednesday.
I think really not much else new beyond the production numbers and kind of the confirmation that soybean exports are robust. Corn is suffering a little bit, probably getting a little more competition from feed wheat coming out of the Black Sea area than what was forecast earlier. But didn't really change, in my mind, the overall fundamental picture too much.
Can you give me an upside potential for the corn market?
I think you have to think in terms of time frame on that. Going into next spring, I think you could see some $4 cash corn kind of routinely as kind of an upside of what I'm thinking about.
If you can hold it that long, of course. Yeah. And, of course, that may be easier this week than it was 3 weeks ago, that's for sure, trying to figure out whether you could hold corn that long. When are the best marketing months normally for corn and for soybean?
You say historically, June time frame has been a kind of the month where we most often see the highs. It doesn't mean that you average the highest in that month, but that's often been when the highs occur in both the corn and soybean markets. But having said that, the last two or three years, we've kind of deviated from that pattern a little bit because of the unusual nature of outside markets and their influence on corn and soybeans.
All right. Thank you very much, Daryl, for joining me today.
Okay, Todd. Thank you.
Daryl Good, University of Illinois Ag Economist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. This is Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In agricultural news, Brazil's government has published a list of more than 100 U.S. products that may be subject to tariff increases as a result of a World Trade Organization ruling this year condemning U.S. subsidies to its cotton industry. The Brazil government said the list was made available for public consultation before final decisions on retaliations are made. According to the government's announcement published in its Federal Register, items on the list could be subject to tariff increases of up to 100 percentage points. In addition to cotton and other agricultural and textile products, the list includes goods such as motor vehicle products, electronics, cosmetics, medical equipment, and pharmaceutical products. The WTO in June ruled that Brazil could impose retaliatory measures against U.S. subsidies that Brazil alleged caused more than $3 billion in damages to its industry. The ruling allows for initial retaliation of around $800 million. The chief of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization says that more aid is needed to curb the rising number of hungry people in the world, which topped 1 billion for the first time this year. A summit in Rome will discuss ways to curb rising global hunger, not only by boosting funding, but by imposing coordination between government, multilateral agencies, and non-governmental organizations. That summit taking place in Rome on November 16th through the 18th. Central to the plan is reform of the UN Committee on Food Security, which groups 124 nations to give it a monitoring role to ensure aid money is channeled to agriculture. Federal Reserve officials say unemployment in the U.S. likely will remain high for the next several years because the economic recovery won't be strong enough to spur robust hiring. The cautionary note struck by the presidents of regional Fed banks in San Francisco and Atlanta were the first public remarks since the government reported last week that the nation's jobless rate went to 10.2% in October. And Hamburg-based Oil World says that European Union oilseed crushers are resuming purchases of U.S. soybeans after the EU approved imports of corn with genetically modified organisms. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. On the line with us from the Andersons right here in Champaign County is Greg Johnson. And like the rest of this program, it was recorded on Tuesday afternoon because, of course, I'm either arriving in Kansas City or traveling to Kansas City, actually, at the moment while you're listening to the program. Greg, thanks for being with us today. Tell me about the early week progress farmers have made in the cornfield and whether beans have been ramped up. You pretty much said that was over with in Champaign County when I talked to you on Monday.
Yeah, we had a good bean day on Monday, and that finished up a lot of people. We've got a few double crop beans left. And just a few fields still standing in some wet fields. Other than that, the bean harvest in our area is probably 90-95% wrapped up. And now the farmers are looking to make a dent in that corn crop. I think they had us, you know, statewide or district-wide anyway, close to 30% done, and that's about what we figure we are done here. So a lot of corn left to go. The weather looks ideal for this week. A lot of drying took place over the weekend, so the corn moisture is coming down. And farmers are going to hit it as hard as they can and as hard as long as the elevators are open and can dry corn. That seems to be the limiting factor right now is drying capacity.
When we talked to you Monday, I think 19 was about as low as you could get on this afternoon, which is a Tuesday when we're talking to you, as a reminder. How low have you gotten today?
That's about it. 18.5. I think we had one field that was 18.5, but most of it, our average moisture today is 21.5, and that's down a half a point from yesterday's 22, and last week it was 24. So it is drying down slowly but surely, and if the weather stays like it is and we get a little warming trend next weekend as in the forecast, hopefully that corn will continue to dry down.
Yeah, how much more quickly can you get corn through the process and get it stored adequately once you've dropped down 3, 4, 5 points down to 21?
It'll help, but I think we're in the same boat as a lot of other elevators. We've taken a lot of corn in, assuming that the corn will dry down. So we, as well as others, are going to have to take some time, and I know farmers don't want to hear that, but we're just going to have to let the dryers get caught up because there was a lot of corn that was harvested at that 23, 24, 25% moisture range that we can keep on air for a few days, but that won't keep indefinitely. So that corn's going to have to eventually be dried down, and so we're going to have to take some time to get that dried down, and farmers are just going to have to be patient. Everybody's trying to dry as fast as we can, and that, like I say, this is one of those years where nobody ever imagined that we'd get it planted as late as we would, and then have the weather be as cool as it was during the summer. So yeah, it's just one of those years.
And then one final question: I suspect you'll have piles on the ground. At what moisture content are you willing to do that? How about that?
Corn that goes out on the ground will be 15%.
Okay, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
You have a good day. That's Greg Johnson. He's with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Drew Lerner about the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lerner Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lerner Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lerner Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's National Sunday Day. It's also St. Martin's Day, patron of harvests, horses, and innkeepers. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, chrysanthemums were introduced to England from China. Both the greens and blossoms are edible and are especially popular in Japan, China, and Vietnam. In 1933, the first great dust storm occurred on the Great Plains. A massive drought and decades of farming techniques where the fertile soils of the Great Plains were exposed through the removal of prairie grasses led to clouds of black dust that made the sky appear black all the way to Chicago. In 1938, Mary Mallon died at North Brother Island, New York City. Better known as Typhoid Mary, she was an infamous household cook who was responsible for major outbreaks of typhoid in the New York City area in 1904, 1907, and 1914. Mallon's case showed that a person could be a carrier without showing any outward signs of being sick, and it led to most of the health code laws on the books today. And in 1973, Arturi Virtanen died. A Finnish biochemist, his investigations led to the discovery of the AIV method. He found that cows fed silage preserved with a mixture of hydrochloric and sulfuric acid produced milk the same in taste from that of cows fed on normal fodder and were just as rich in vitamins A and C. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City graciously joined me yesterday to talk about the agricultural weather forecast because, as you already know, Dave Dickey, Director of Ag Programming, and I are traveling at this point, probably maybe just pulling into the Crown Plaza there in Kansas City on a Wednesday afternoon, and I'll bet we get to see Drew Lerner at some point during the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. He's on the line with us now, though, to take up the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this forecast in broad general scopes, because we're recording, of course, on a Tuesday afternoon as opposed to a Wednesday. What do you see for the Midwest? It looks like, at least at this point, that it should be really good harvesting weather.
Yeah, I think it really is going to continue favorable. I think we've got October well behind us now, and we can try to have a little bit more of a positive thought process about the rest of the harvest. But it is, of course, getting deeper into the autumn season, and we are going to find eventually our weather trending cooler again and some increased precipitation. And some of that is already in the advertisement department for the second week of our two-week forecast. And I think that it makes good logical sense that we will see a little bit of a higher frequency of precipitation as we get into the second half of this month. I think it's real important, though, that I don't leave the impression that we're going to fall back into the October pattern, because I do not think that will be the case. El Nino continues to strengthen, and as it does so, we're going to find ourselves in an environment that's a little bit less cold. In other words, the Canadian prairie is going to be quite a bit warmer. It's going to be difficult for us to get big surges of cold air to come down into the heart of the Midwest. So we probably won't be seeing quite as much precipitation as we saw last month, but we will see at least a little higher frequency of precipitation that will put us behind just a little bit, but we will be able to work those fields a little bit in between the weather systems. So I'm still encouraged about the situation. We just have so much work still left to be done in quite a few areas, and that's the biggest concern, of course.
And, of course, good news for farmers in the Midwest. If you could take a broad general look at South America.
I'm really concerned about some of the Argentina cropland, not only from a soybean perspective, but also from corn and sunseed and sorghum perspective. Some of the westernmost parts of Argentina have had less than 25% of normal rainfall since October 1st. And prior to that, there was some problems with dryness as well. So some of those western areas, of course, were in a big drought last year, and so we are low on water supply, and there's the subsoil moisture is really lacking. It's time to kick into high gear here and get some rain to fall in western Argentina in order to prevent a second year in a row of lower production potentials. Now, before everyone quickly runs to the marketplace to cash in on this deal, I do feel pretty confident that we are going to see a change in Argentina's weather as we go into the second half of November, especially late this month and in December. I think it'll start raining much more normal-like, and that's going to be thanks to El Nino.
Drew, thank you so much, and I hope to see you in Kansas City.
Yeah, have a safe, you're already here, so have a good time.
That's right. Thanks much, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Wednesday afternoon. I, of course, am in Kansas City, or should be by the time this program airs. You have a great day and be safe, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow. I'm Todd Gleason.